Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity with Susan Chiraco, where we help you transform your life by changing what you're telling yourself. Whatever your circumstances, you can experience health, financial security, and a sense of well-being once again. And now, here's your host, Susan Chiraco.
On behalf of Rebuilding Your Life Radio and the Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power calls, welcome. Today, I have the pleasure of visiting with Frank Gertner, who is the author of the book Sally's Magical River, and also Rebecca Nemethy, who is the narrator of the Audible version of this book. As so many of us do, Frank started off wanting to be a musician. Yet by the time he graduated from the University of Arizona, his degree was in molecular biology. And he went on to Purdue to research cellular freeze systems that ironically led to the PCR tests that are playing such a big role in how we're dealing with the coronavirus this year. Then a pattern began to emerge in his life. Every time he made a career move, a guy would show up to point him in a new direction. I think you'll find the magical river of his life a very interesting way to get into the book, Sally's Magical River. Please wave your hands to welcome Frank Gertner. Hello, Frank. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Susan. This is like really, really special for me. Very exciting.
Good, good, good. I'm glad. And thank you for bringing another guest with you, Rebecca Nemethy, who narrates the Audible version of the book. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm very honored.
Well, we're honored as well, I must say. Frank, I'd like it if you would share this form of guided journey that your career has taken with a number of these guys who just show up to point you along your path. Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, sure would. I've been thinking about this ever since we talked earlier and trying to put it all together somehow, and it doesn't come together really easily because there's all this disparate stuff that goes on that ends up leading to things. And it started for me in a big way when I was 10 years old, which is happens to be the same age as Sally. She's 10 years old too. And I like to say that what happened to me then was a huge lemon that I made lemonade out of eventually. And same thing happens with Sally. In my case, my father died right in front of me when I was 10 years old, and it changed everything. It uprooted me from the city and took me to the farm where I met my stepfather out in the middle of the Yuma Desert. And I was moved from the city to the farm and into a new land of strange animals, including kangaroo rats and rattlesnakes and all sorts of wonderful things that our kids could enjoy. And so that is one of the big things that happened that led to my developing some survival skills. It also, the event itself got me into vision thinking because this event where my father died, I can still see that event like it happened yesterday. It's a nice little movie that runs in my mind. But it's not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing because I have developed this ability, and I also have a great memory from my past. The other thing is that it led to a lot of obsessive behaviors, which sounds like that could be a bad thing. And for a while it was because I became a drunk. And it was true. When I had poured lab alcohol in my coffee in the morning, I gave wonderful lectures to my students. But, that's not a really good plan, so I had to dump that particular obsession. But obsessive behavior is another thing that comes out in the book. It's an important part of it. It's something, if you're obsessive, what happens is that you are obsessed to do something until you're compelled to do it. And as long as you direct those obsessions into good directions, then things can really happen well. So as a result of that, I've been able to do things that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. And what happened was is that I did go to school. I got interested in music. My father was a musician, so I was going to be a musician. And then I got into with a teacher who was a very excellent teacher. And he got me, he said, well, you know, Frank, you could do your music, but why don't you just go to school and maybe you could work in a lab or something. And I said, well, yeah, I kind of like science. So I did that. Anyway, that whole idea of just working in a lab and doing music for real just kind of flipped around until the point where I was doing nothing but science. And that led to my being in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, being the, as one of these things that happens, just one of these things that happens, the very first person to help develop a graduate school in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, in the biology division. Really wonderful graduate school. And I had a huge 1,000-foot square foot lab, and I was doing some amazing research there. But the laboratory itself, another thing happens, the laboratory itself isn't doing very well. You know, the government started pulling out funds from the energy department, and I decided that maybe time to move on. And so as a result, I got involved in doing some yeast genetic work, yeast molecular genetics. Well, really very few other people were doing that. And as a result of that, I thought, well, maybe I could get to California. I made some phone calls. One of them was to the Salk Institute. And pretty much right on the spot, they hired me. And I was the first employee of a company called Cibia. And I was able to put a gene in this yeast that they were working with that they got from Phillips Petroleum for doing whatever they wanted to do with it. And that worked out real well. And then a fellow came along that was a friend of mine, said, hey, Frank, I'd like to maybe work with you. And I said, well, that'd be great. He was out of work. I said, so I went to my boss and I said, how about this guy come in here? And they didn't like the idea. But the same guy went up to a venture capitalist up in Los Angeles, up in San Francisco, and they talked about an idea that we had, which was putting a gene into plants that would protect them from insects. And we went ahead and made a company. So that company is in Mycogen. It's called Mycogen, and that's the company that I helped co-found here in San Diego. And we ended up making all sorts of really cool things. Now, the point of all this is that I am now here in San Diego. I am still thinking all the time that I would like to do music. And so what I do is I put on a banner on my computer that I would like to arrange music. I didn't know how it was going to happen, maybe conduct a concert or something. Anyway, what happens is that the fellow in the work, the person had gotten this keyboard. Didn't know what the hell it was, but she got the keyboard in lieu of rent from somebody and she wanted to get rid of it. And this friend came up and said, hey, would you like this thing? And I said, well, it sounds interesting. And I said, so I took that. And it turned out it was a PV synthesizer, one of the most remarkable instruments of the time that you could make any instrument. And I went ahead and orchestrated the music from the well-tempered clavichord. And that appears in Sally and the Magic River as the F-sharp minor fugue. Anyway, from that thing, that's one of the things I got just happened. Okay. And then mm-hmm. another thing that comes along as a result of that happening is that my daughter comes to me and says, hey, Dad, could you do some music for me? And I said, no, I couldn't do that. Well, as a result of that, I decided maybe I could, and I ended up doing the music for my daughter's weddings. And awesome. As a result of having done that, I ended up on Reverb Nation, and as a result of that, I'm usually number 8 to number 10 in Reverb Nation, at least for San Diego. Really weird, really weird. But, I mean, this is very all-satisfying stuff. And so out of all of this, I'm saying that a really bad thing happened to me. A really bad thing happened to Sally. And as a result of those bad things, we both had picked up some talents, like we both became obsessive. We both began to take on magical thinking. And a lot of people think magical thinking is a bad thing, but if you really understand quantum mechanics, you understand that everything is magical. There's nothing not magic. The whole universe is nothing but magic. And then focusing and paying attention about the next thing that happens. You know, somebody will come along at the right time. If you're not antenna or not paying attention to that, you'll miss it. And I learned to do that. And then doing the next indicated thing always is a good thing to do, because worrying about what's going to happen in the future or what happened in the past doesn't get you anywhere. And these vision quests. So I now live in San Diego, having come from Tennessee, and I had this vision. I'd had it the whole time I was in Tennessee, of living in a particular place in San Diego, and there was no chance that I could live there. It was way too expensive and just impossible. I wanted to be on the beach. I wanted to be not on just any beach. I wanted to be on Pacific Beach. And I wanted to have the best view that anybody ever had. This is a vision I had. So guess what? That's what I've got. I probably have the best view in San Diego of Pacific Beach. And I've been there now for 40 years. So that was an accomplishment that fits in with this whole vision thing. Writing mm-hmm. this book was a vision thing. That came about as a result of a canoe trip that my wife and I took down the Colorado River. She was so excited about it, she started writing a little book called Selling Linda and the Magic Mountains, because we passed by the Magic Mountains, and we had started the whole trip like that when Hurricane Linda blew through. The story was wonderful. She did really great with it. But she got stuck. And so she handed me this little paragraph, or handed me her story, and I wrote this little paragraph for her. It's a bridging paragraph. And I thought it was great. She didn't like it. So I got it back, and I took it to work, and I just sat down at the keyboard and just let my fingers do, you know, this thing that you do on the keyboard. I had no outline, nothing. And this book came out, Sally and the Magic River. And to me, after Rebecca went ahead and narrated this thing, it's, to me, one of the best things that's ever been written. it's very disarming. It is very, it's got all its wonderful guidelines for living. And it could be used as a guidebook, I think. And it's kind of subtle. You have to look for them. They don't just stand out, hey, this is a guidepost. No, you've got to look for it, but it's all there. Everything I've been talking about, how you can mm-hmm. make things happen in your life. And that's probably pretty much it. The whole idea of vision questing is
yes.
very powerful.
Yes.
Very powerful.
It really is.
I have one
you know,
thing
I have,
else that I wanted to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've been vision questing on this business of sitting in the Academy Awards and looking at my movie getting the best picture. And so that is, I mean, that's ridiculous. That can't happen. But everything in my life is ridiculous. None of it could have happened, and yet it has. So I don't put that out of my mind. The other thing is that I'm working on fixing this pandemic. And now I've connected with a big company here in San Diego who likes my idea. And I think maybe we're going to fix the damn pandemic. Not just this one, but every pandemic that comes our way, every cold that comes our way, and every flu that comes our way. So I don't like to think small. That is about as huge as it can get. And there it is. I'm done.
There it is. That's pretty huge. You know, that's a marvelous, marvelous concept. I know I've read a story about a group of kids that worked together this way from the time they started school. They had a teacher who was particularly beneficial to them. And they were encouraged to dream as big as it goes. And some mm-hmm. of it was totally impossible. I think mm-hmm. one of the characters wanted to make it impossible for us to die, that we would all live forever. And mm-hmm. it doesn't happen overnight. You have to do some work along the way. And as you talk about, you know, getting into the Academy Awards, one of the things we talked about was this is Sally's Magic River is not an illustrated book, although the qualities of it, and I think Rebecca will echo this in a minute, that there's a that magical quality is really best conveyed visually with graphics and the interplay of real life and the graphic scenarios. So you see it, you went so far in order to get this Academy Award, you see it as a screenplay, you see yourself accepting an Academy Award, and then you did something that might move you along that direction. You did a speed date with Hollywood producers. What was that like?
Oh my God, that was some fun. I didn't do very well because I was scared shitless, but I did my best, and I did get a couple of responses. But I know I could have. I didn't make a big hit. I was given bad guidance. I think I was told to do it a certain way, and if I had just done it as me rather than trying to be them, I think it would have worked better.
You need anyway. Some. Yeah, it is fun. It can be fun. And I think you probably learned something. And if you were to continue to reach out to producers, you'd be looking for someone who already, you know, like Roger Rabbit and, you know, that the Steve Martin, is it a Dick Tracy kind of movie? There, you know, there's a combination of real life and animation that makes it wonderful. And there's some, and there's a Robin Williams movie that also has those qualities of going from real life into the, you know, to the underground, you know, to the underworld. So it's, you know, there are elements of this story which have a little bit of that feel to them visually. Now, Now you, of course, are in the just getting this Audible version of Sally's Magic River out, which is a wonderful way to go with this story. I mean, the having those characters come to life with different voices. And so how did you go about finding Rebecca, and how did you choose her as your narrator?
Another one of these vision quest things, you know. I just had this all of a sudden. Hey, you know, I've got this screenplay and it looks pretty good. And then, but I started listening to Audible books as a result of being 82 and needing to take care of my body. I started running and I needed something to entertain myself as I ran. And so I've been listening to Audible books ever since. That's just an amazing thing to do for yourself. So here I'm 82. I run 6 miles, 8 miles every day. And, you know, I don't feel 80. I feel more like 40, if not younger. I don't look that way, but I feel that way. Anyhow, the point being that one can think that they want to do something, and then they can really get it in their picture. And I had this picture of this woman who could be my narrator, because I'd heard very, very good narrators. As I was doing, I've done hundreds of books, Audible books, so I know a good narrator when I hear one. And I went to Fiverr, and the first person that came up was Rebecca. There she was. And I didn't even look any further. I said, that's her. And there's Rebecca right there. She just came out of Fiverr.
Fiverr. F-I-B-B-E-R, Fibber. Rebecca, what was it like to narrate this book?
Oh, it was really a lot of fun. And it's so fun listening to Frank describe this, because I kind of feel like magical myself. It kind of feels like Frank manifested me to help create this book. And it was a really, really fun process. The characters are really fun. And it has... so many magical elements that it's quite interesting, because I feel like every book I do, there's something in every book that I do that really kind of resonates with what I'm learning at that point in my life. There's always some gem in every story I do. And it's funny because it's kind of like I'm supposed to be doing it. So when I was reading, the process of the narration means that I'm going to read the whole book first. So my first read through, I just remember stopping and going, wow, I think I'm really meant to be reading this. It just resonated so much. So many of the magical things I was learning about life and how life can be created, essentially, were coming up in this book for me. So it resonated with me on a spiritual level. It made me laugh a lot. And it was really a ton of fun to narrate because the characters are so fun. So, yeah. And I can
also see
what you're talking about, Susan, like a Roger Rabbit type of movie where there's animation and real actors. That would be perfect for this book as a film production. I could totally see that working so well.
I do too.
It
and
is
it would
like
capture
a little,
that.
Alternative version of Wizard of Oz kind of thing, a modern day version,
yes.
Maybe.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, Frank, your work as a scientist, from what I'm sensing about you, that your work takes you into the realm of quantum mechanics, quantum physics.
Well, I've gotten into it since I started running.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, has it colored how you wrote the book?
It certainly has colored how I think about it. First of all, Sally is sent to a strange land, and it has to be a quantum mechanical version if it's going to be real, because she's in an accident, and she is pronounced dead. She's brain dead, and there is no way for her to come out of this thing, and yet she does. So one way I can see, I don't know if you know about Schrodinger and Schrodinger's cat and the wave equations and the Schrodinger function.
I have read them, but I don't remember the detail of Schrodinger's
cat. Well, anyway,
cat.
The whole idea, that's a big problem, because the wave function, when it collapses, you don't know. So let's say Schrodinger's cat is in a box. And there's a way to kill the cat with a certain timing involved that you don't know about. And so the cat is either dead or alive. And the truth is, the cat is both dead and alive until you open the box. And then the wave function collapses. Well, one way of looking at that is that the cat is both dead and alive. And if you open the box and the cat is dead, well, it's alive in another universe. Or if the cat is alive, it's dead in another universe. So that's kind of the concept.
Yes. Okay. Well, that is a. I mean, I actually love talking about quantum creation and that sort of thing. It's, in fact, in my book Rainbows Over Ruins, I had been reading a book by John Assaroff, I've lost the name of the book. I think it's Answers, but it's in which he describes us all living in a sea of consciousness. And when I went to publish, my editor said, well, this is a secondary resource. This is not a primary educational source. Go find a quantum physicist who you can read and study and see if there is a parallel that his work collaborates this idea of the sea of consciousness. And I don't have quantum physicists in my back pocket. So I happened to be talking to a friend who is into science, and she said, well, you should check out Amit Goswami. Well, he has written on quantum creation and quantum advocacy for quite some time. And I found, yes, he absolutely collaborated, he was corroborating what I was reading from Assaroff. So I really got into it for a while, and it's along the lines of what you're describing. How does that work or apply to the work that you're currently doing?
The work I'm currently doing is it fits into this idea. And that is that consciousness is neither created nor destroyed, and it's all consciousness if you look at it. So I am consisting of 8 quintillion atoms. That's an 8 followed by 27 zeros. And those atoms are you know, I'm made of those atoms, but that's not right. Actually, I'm made by them, and every day they remake me. They're all doing that on their own. They're all magically making all these wonderful inventions that keep me running. I'm not doing it. Nobody else is doing it. The atoms are doing it. And those atoms all consist of energy, which all boils down to consciousness as far as I'm concerned. So I'm not sure exactly what your question is, but with regard to the work I'm doing, I don't know. I think I just believe in magic, that's all.
Well, I think, I mean, you do on a very real level, that magic is, you know, on a consciousness level. It's this idea of visioning. It's the idea of there is no such thing as impossible. And you don't even want to be around people who don't see that there's possibility in everything. I think you mentioned that when we talked the last time. So that I'm really, you know, that to me is, I mean, even as you said, consciousness cannot be destroyed. Well, that means that consciousness is energy, because energy can neither be created or destroyed.
Right.
It is.
Same. Mm-hmm.
So it's, I found that, and your career, I mean, coming from, you know, the point where we were right on the cusp as you were starting out your life for things mm-hmm. like artificial intelligence and genetics. And these were all impossible. Mm-hmm. Nobody believed mm-hmm. in any of this.
Yeah. Oh,
now, yep. And then suddenly there's a whole alternate reality, and genomes is the path of the world we're in. Mm-hmm. Redoing DNA through the vaccines, and what do they call it? RNA rewritten, something like that. It's fascinating to see how you're right on that cutting edge of what is becoming real to us, yeah. even though it was impossible when you started your career. It would never have happened.
I have a viewing wall, and I'm in the room with the viewing wall, and all on the wall is just covered with amazing stories from the 1930s on up to the 1950s, which is when I was avidly reading these books, and they all have the things we're talking about. The artificial intelligence, the space travel, everything is there. So
it was already there. Yeah, yeah. It was that kernel of an idea. So mm-hmm. important. I think you also say that we're now in a world with a possibility. This is something you mentioned the other day. A possibility that we could slip into an alternate reality. And that, in fact, you kind of said that Sally herself does exactly that. She just pops mm-hmm. over. And you guys, we're into that sequence of how that happens. What does Sally do that enables her to make that journey and experience?
Well, what Sally does, she doesn't do it deliberately. She gets herself into an accident that sends her there. And it's while she's in that alternate reality that she is able to work through the rivers of her mind, let's say, to come back to the other reality. And she is pronounced dead, and there's no way out. It's hopeless. And yet her struggle, which is a real struggle, I mean, she is really struggling all the way through this book in a very fun way, but it's a struggle. And she has to really believe in herself. That's another part of it that I find is so key, is to just get to the point where you believe in yourself, and it doesn't matter what other people think. You just believe in yourself and go
believing.
Ahead. And
mm-hmm. That's really important. And it goes along with your idea about vision, the vision quests that you go on. I love visions. I have for years. I've always felt that I wanted to help people find their visions, their dreams, mm-hmm. and figure out how to manifest them. That is, to me, that's the most creative thing you can do in the world.
Well, you know, and the other thing that you should know, I believe, is Rebecca is very much doing all of this herself. I mean, she's a Renaissance woman herself, and she's doing a lot of amazing things in the area you're talking about.
What are you doing, Rebecca?
Oh, I mean, what have I done? What am I doing? It all kind of jumbles together. I've had a lot of jobs. I've mostly been trying to do I've been trying to combine play and work probably my entire life without realizing that's what I was doing. My mission in life has very much been to have a job that I really enjoy. And I've been on a long journey to do that. And I have had jobs that I've enjoyed, but I feel like this is the perfect fit for me, the job that I'm doing now. And it, as you're all talking about creating your own reality, it's really interesting the thoughts that are coming up for me, because I have been manifesting my reality and doing it almost consciously since I was probably in my early 20s. But it's funny because I say almost consciously because sometimes we have a vision for our lives that we create, but we don't realize that it's not really what we want. And I've done that a lot. And so when I became an audiobook narrator, that kind of came like out of nowhere. I came to audiobooks very playfully. And I came to audiobooks because I wanted to have fun, because I was recording a podcast that was very serious and very, it was starting to get me down a little bit because it was a very serious topic. And so when I came to audiobooks, I was doing accents and I was playing with how characters could sound. And it was so much fun that I decided I was going to go on this website that an author friend of mine actually had told me about, because she heard my podcast and she said, I could hear you doing like a mystery novel. Why don't you go to this website and check it out? And I was like, oh, that's cool. So I went to ACX.com, which is basically the back end of Audible. It's where Audible books go through ACX.com in order to get onto Audible. And narrators and authors can meet there as well. And I told myself I was going to do 100 auditions until somebody picked me to do their book, which is so funny because I actually just passed 100 auditions maybe a few months ago. I'm up to like 120 or something like that, and I have 40 books out now. I'm on my 40th
wow.
book. So
that's incredible.
It was just, mm-hmm. It's just so funny how life works out when you're just, sometimes you don't know what you want, and sometimes you need to, while the vision is very important, and I think you need to have a solid vision for what you want life to be, for me, letting go of that very, I don't know, sharp vision and letting it blur a little bit and letting myself play in life is kind of to what led me here. So it's just interesting as I'm pulling from my own life, how you talk about your own lives manifesting. It's really interesting to reflect on how I've gotten to this point.
Is there a way we can hear what Rebecca?
We're going to be there.
On
we're going to get there in just a minute. I did want to ask her a couple other questions before we do.
Awesome. Yeah.
So, Rebecca, did you consider yourself on a spiritual journey of some kind, that, or this is something new that's coming into you?
Oh no, I've been on the spiritual journey probably since I was born. You know, I do truly believe that. We kind of choose our lives to at least one in some aspects. We kind of choose our lives before we come here. That's kind of a new belief for me. I haven't always believed that, but I've gone through, I was actually raised as a Jehovah's Witness. Then shortly after that, I was an atheist because I didn't agree with anything that I learned. And then slowly over the years, you know, I was a very angsty teenager. And that when I came out of that, I started to open my mind up to other religions and spirituality, and I learned about the law of attraction. And so I have been really digging in deep the past, I'd say decade, into alternative spiritual beliefs and just learning what other people believe and finding what resonates with me. And Sally and the Magic River, when I was reading it, when I was introduced to Sally's first big challenge, which I don't know if we'll talk about, but she's caught and she has to learn how to overcome her fear. She's caught in the air and she's going to maybe leave the planet if she doesn't learn how to fly. She doesn't learn how to control her universe, essentially. So when she finally does, it really resonated with me. I was like, yes. And that at that point too, I think when I read that chapter, I feel like when I connect with a character, that's when I also connect with an author. So I feel like even though Frank and I had been getting along wonderfully through our emails and everything, and he knew what he wanted and he was really excited and he excited me, I think it was when I read that part in Sally and the Magic River that I really truly connected with Frank, because I knew we had that sliver in common. We had that belief in magic in common. So it was great.
So here you are narrating this book that is dealing with principles that, whether stated or unstated, take you into a whole different realm and of experience. And this might be a really good point in which you could share a portion of the book, the narration, with us so we can get a sense of it. And would you mind setting up the scene that we're going to be hearing?
Yeah, sure. So this is one of my favorite clips of Sally, just because it features one of my favorite characters, which is Sarah. Along the lines of The Wizard of Oz, there are qualities of dreamlike reality blending with reality, I guess you could call it. And so some of these characters are, the clip I'm about to play, the characters are in the dream state where they are actually animals. And Sarah is a bird. And she's my favorite character just because Frank set it up. I have to give this preamble because I don't know why. It makes me self-conscious that people are going to be like, what kind of accent were you trying to do? But in reality, Frank set this book up, and you'll hear it in the clip, that this character sounded a lot like Martin Short in the Father of the Bride, I believe the movie is called, the wedding counselor in Father of the Bride. And if you actually look that movie up, you would find that Martin Short, when he was learning how to play that character, was actually trying to create his own accent. It was an accent that didn't exist. They didn't want anyone who was watching the movie to be able to tell where this character was from. So it's a very fun accent. And what Frank really did beautifully in this book is he made it really easy for me, because when I have to do accents, I actually have to go to a coach and I have to learn how to say things properly, because accents are, people actually have genuine accents, right? So mm-hmm. Frank kind of made it really easy for me. He wrote it right into the dialogue. Things are written just as they should be said. So this is the joint creation of how Frank's dialogue and my acting abilities came into play. So I'll hit play on that now so you guys can hear it.
Thank you.
Sarah was a large, jet black raven who never failed to find Sally when she was out walking. Although Sally was extremely pleased to see Sarah, Sally couldn't help but grimace a little in preparation for what she knew would happen next. Sarah's greeting included an air show, where she would soar high into the sky, caw 3 times, and dive to near ground level in a streak of black feathers that invariably scored a goal between Fidget's 2 large jackrabbit ears. Today, Sarah offered no exception to her routine, and Fidget, as was his custom, pretended to be completely oblivious to the fact that his ears were now twisted around each other. The two friends always met in this fashion, and if their meeting were all that anyone saw, no one would think that they got along very well. However, upon further inspection, it was plain to see that their disdain was nothing but a playful act.
Sally!
The raven called as she zoomed straight up from the rabbit's ears turned goalposts. She continued soaring into the sky and made a giant loop to dive once more and land atop a nearby orange tree. Sally mused to herself,
I'll bet one day I'll fly like that.
But she wasn't about to say anything to Sarah. The raven was a big tease and would make fun of the idea until she saw for herself that Sally could do it. As for Fidget, Sally knew he wouldn't say anything. He was a good listener and kept things to himself. When the 2 earthbound travelers caught up to Sarah, they were greeted with a question that left Fidget wondering more than just a little.
Sally!
The raven began in a crow accent that sounded like a cross between Steve Martin's Wild and Crazy Guy and Martin Short's Wedding Counselor.
How did you get way over here on this side of our valley, so early in the morning?
Now that was a good question. Although Sally's home was visible on the opposing hill, she lived a good 4 miles away, and while Sally walked this way almost every weekend, it was a steady climb that took her at least an hour. She would have had to start walking by 6:30 to do it. Sally stuttered.
I couldn't sleep.
That seemed to satisfy the raven. But Fidget knew Sally never got up that early on a weekend. The hour or so before 7 was sacrosanct. It was her time for lying in bed to daydream about her canoe and the magic river. Sally's canoe was a one-of-a-kind, 13-foot, all-wood, whitewater racer named Amber that was mounted on the west wall of the family's garage. The stunningly beautiful C1 was made, raced, and on her 6th birthday, given to Sally by her grandfather. Often, as she was heading off to school with her mom, they would get in the car, open the garage door, letting in the morning sunlight, and there would be Amber, her golden mahogany deck glowing, greeting Sally, beckoning. When Sally was 4, she had seen a video of her mom and dad running their canoes through whitewater, and had ever since dreamed of the day that she herself would do it. Her grandfather's gift had only heightened her desire. Sally spent many hours telling Fidget about this dream and how on weekends, before she got up in the morning, she would visualize herself paddling Amber through heavy rapids. She explained how after many months of such meditation, the experience had become exceptionally vivid. She could see herself in heart-stopping detail, guiding Amber through the entire course of the thunderous river. The image had become so real for her that she was sure that this magic river must exist, and, she told Fidget,
Amber and I will someday run it.
There you have it.
Awesome.
I love it. Thank you so much, Rebecca. And thank you, Frank, for giving us a vision, a glimpse into quantum possibilities, through the story of Sally's Magic River and the journey she has to take along the way. Is this a children's book?
For me, it is not a children's book, but it could be read to children. I think there's nothing in it that would be objectionable. Even the accident that she has is not done in any kind of way that would be scary, I don't think.
Okay.
I think it's something that probably anybody could enjoy. I don't think it's a child's book, but a child could understand it probably and enjoy it just as much as an adult.
I do wonder.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Just a question that hits my mind is: was The Wizard of Oz or Alice in Wonderland, which are both stories, I think, kind of are similar to the way Sally is executed, were those written for children or adults? I'm not even sure because I feel like there are so many kids and adults that love both of those.
Right. I
have
a question for both of you, just for fun. Do you ever pick up square pegs and try hammering them into round holes? I have found that is a really good clue that I'm not walking on the path that I ought to be walking on. So I always pay attention to that. If the doors open easily, then and
go
the pegs keep going along, it always works.
Yeah.
I mean, I have, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to be doing something. It doesn't mean that I'm going to be involved. But it means that if I'm involved and all of a sudden I'm starting to have thoughts that run contrary to what I'm doing, maybe it's guilt or maybe it's worry or whatever, it's probably a good clue that I'm not walking on the path I need to be on.
Mm-hmm. It's a good clue. It's a very good clue. Avoid closed doors.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. So where can people get a copy of both the physical or Kindle version of the book and of the Audible version?
Well, certainly Audible is available, and Amazon is available, and I believe it can be obtained in most bookstores as a book.
You also have a website?
I do. It's called Sally's Magic River. The book is Sally and the Magic River. But the website is sallysmagicriver.com. And it has a lot of cool things in it. It has an excerpt from the book that Rebecca reads, and you get to see a picture of her, which is a cool picture. And also it has many of the sites which actually take place in the book that are real. There's pictures of Santa Paula and pictures of Moore Park Road, that kind of thing. And the car she drives in, there's also a reference to the St. Francis Dam, which is referred to. And then there's also a full rendition of the music called Rivulets that introduces the book and ends the book. There's a book video in there. And also there's a book interview which will be accompanied by this one too. It's kind of a fun website.
Well, great. People will have to go take a look. So thank you for that. And thanks to our listeners for joining us today. We've been talking about the power of possibility and the power of vision through the story of a young girl in Sally's Magic River. I'd like to challenge each listener to take away the thought that as we learn to use these powers within each one of us, we can see the impossible become probable and ultimately inevitable. Play mm-hmm. with that thought and see if it takes you down your own magic river. Now, you mm-hmm. may support this type of writing by picking up a copy of Sally's Magic River and also with sharing it with others. And you can support the work of this program by going to the anchor.fm podcast, Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power, like us, follow us, sponsor or subscribe. And I asked Frank a little earlier if he had a particular organization that he liked to support. And so if you make a donation and to the Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power call and mention Frank's suggestion, a percentage of your contribution will be sent to them in your name. So we thank you for letting us give authors a voice. The organization is Sparkles Organ Concerts. Frank, can you spell that for them? Because I didn't get it.
Spreckles, like in the sugar baron. Spreckles, Sprekles, Organ Pavilion. And it has to do with the fact that San Diego had installed a pipe organ during the 1915 World's Fair here in San Diego. So the thing's over 100 years old, but it is the largest outdoor pipe organ in the world. And we have one of the best organists. And what it is it's bringing music to people all over the world now that I think is really useful at a time like this. It's uplifting. And the organist we have is like one of the best, and he does classical as well as music by Queen and other things. He's really fantastic. So I want to support that. And if y'all are interested in supporting something like that, you can also go on YouTube and tune in to the Spreckles Organ Pavilion. Every Sunday he gives a concert. He also talks about Balboa Park and other things. So.
Wonderful.
I think it's
wonderful.
Worth supporting. Yeah.
Yes. So thank you again for being with us, Frank, Rebecca. It's been fun. We've had some playtime today. I really enjoyed having you here today.
Thank you.
It's been great.
Thank you, Rebecca. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, it's time to go on our way today. Thank you. Bye for now and have a great day.
Thank you very much for tuning in today. If you've been inspired by this show, leave a rating or review on iTunes and visit www.rainbowsoverruins.com to receive a free chapter from Susan's book. On behalf of Susan Shirako, this has been Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity, sharing the journeys of those affected by sudden and great loss and what they did to heal, rebuild, and where they are now.